Well, we'll talk about the presidential debate and then the city of the great king, Jerusalem.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
That was one of the more powerful exchanges last night in the debate. It's been quite a weekend. You're listening to The Line of Fire, the place you want to be. Your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in a world that is certainly topsy-turvy. Welcome to the broadcast. In a few minutes, we're going to go from the United States to Jerusalem and talk about some issues that are of world concern, some eye-opening spiritual truths. But first, what's happened over the weekend. I wrote an article that posted yesterday, What King David Could Teach Donald Trump. I just wrote another article that should go live in a few hours. Why all the fuss about the video with Donald Trump's sex comments? Is anyone really surprised that that's the kind of man he was and perhaps still is? So there's a lot going on, but I want to succinctly state a bunch of things. And remember, friends, I'm on the air 2 hours live. Some cities get a half hour, some cities get 1 hour, some cities get two, but everybody can listen to both hours online at thelineoffire.org. So anytime you want to switch over there, you can listen on your cell phone, your tablet, your computer. Just go to thelineoffire.org and just click on the red words, listen live, or just click on listen later in the day and you can catch the whole show afterwards. So a few succinct things. Number one, the comments from 2005, utterly despicable, vile, despicable, horrific, degrading. Every one of us should be utterly revulsed by them, but nobody should be surprised. Isn't this who Donald Trump has been? And didn't the same person say, even recently, that he didn't see any need to ask God for forgiveness in the last year or so? Surely he knew all the things he said and did over the years. So there's no surprise when people are like, oh, no, we can't believe we endorsed him. Who did you think you were endorsing? St. Peter? I mean, come on, really? So having said all that, my issue was how he responded today. There is some apology, some contrition I would like to see more. And for him to just dismiss it as, quote, locker room talk and the debate meeting is just talk, and that's stuff we actually did, still this, yeah, he's not proud of it. He's ashamed. He apologized to his family and to the public. Okay, I appreciate that. But don't just dismiss it as locker room talk. Say this is the kind of stuff in our culture we need to get away from. That being said, in my view, in the view of many, he clearly won the debate last night. And he rightly held Hillary Clinton accountable for things in her own life. Look, we don't know if all the accusations against Bill Clinton are true. It seems a good number of them are. And yeah, she's going to stand with her husband. Fine that she did that. But did she do that at the expense of these women? Did she do that at the expense of the victims? Those are major, major issues. And what about when she defended the rapist of a 12-year-old? And there is an audio tape. I've never heard her adequately dismiss it. She's laughing at it. Yeah, we didn't even have evidence, but you know, we got the thing thrown out, knowing that a guilty man goes free for raping a 12-year-old, and you laugh about it. That's deplorable. I'm glad that came up. And the bias of the moderators was so, it's almost like they're not even trying to hide it anymore. They're just going after Trump. That's only going to help him ultimately. Now, where this lands, that's a whole other question. But let me just say this. If you're voting for Donald Trump, vote for him with your eyes wide open. Don't try to make him into Saint Donald. Don't try to make him into somebody he's not. I'm sure he has good qualities and things he's done well. But understand the flawed man you'd be voting for. Again, I can't possibly vote for Hillary. Donald Trump still has to win my vote. But at least do what you're doing with your eyes wide open. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Jerusalem, oh Jerusalem, why won't you believe in him?
All right, what's happening in America right now, the presidential elections, is very major. It affects the whole world. But ultimately, it's all going to come down to Jerusalem. So be on the alert for my latest videos, latest articles. You can check them out at thelineoffire.org, and this way you can stay posted on what's happening. And I will have more to say about the elections later in the broadcast. But right now, we want to turn our attention to Jerusalem, the city of the great king. I'm joined by Dalton Thomas. He and his wife, Anna, live in Iraq with their four sons. They've recently moved there. Dalton is a pioneer author and filmmaker, the director, editor, and director of photography of the Covenant and Controversy series, a brand new video just being released now. We wanted to be among the first in the world to make this known through our radio broadcast. You're going to be excited to hear about this. Dalton, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, it's a privilege to be with you.
Where are you right now, Dalton?
I'm in northern Iraq. I am in Suran, about equal distance from the Iranian border, Mosul, and the Turkish border. It's like right in the middle. We're about maybe 70 kilometers as the crow flies from Mosul.
Why in the world would a young married man with four little kids move from the United States over to Iraq?
Well, I think my family and I were living in Turkey. We were living here there as missionaries, and we were working to make much of King Jesus. And when ISIS came on the scene and Fallujah fell, I think we started paying attention to Syria and Iraq in a focused way. And then when Mosul fell, we started looking at it in an even more focused way. And so we made some scouting trips over here in the months that followed the fall of the city. And my wife and I felt led by the Lord to put our roots down here and to serve among the ongoing and escalating refugee conflict, both the Syrian civil war and the issue with ISIS. And it's a privilege, sobering days to be able to labor for the gospel here.
What's life like all around you?
Well, right now it's quite on edge with the looming liberation of Mosul. I think on one hand, it's been the most talked about military campaign in the history of military campaigns in one sense, in that it's been, they keep saying it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. They've been saying that for 2 years now, but it's definitely coming. So we were just on the front lines a few days ago in eyesight of the city center itself, Mosul, because we're working with pioneering medical programs to serve Peshmerga, who are really on the front lines of the fight against ISIS. And they have, only a few villages left before they're at this, essentially the gates of the city. At that point, Iraqi forces and coalition forces could actually, enter the city at that point. It's unclear whether that will happen. In the near future, whether that will happen in the new year, we don't know. We do know that Peshmerga forces have done about all they can do at this point. We know they won't take the city because of the ethnic religious tensions there, that the Iraqi forces will be the ones to actually enter the city and quote-unquote liberate it. So it's definitely on edge. The UN estimates possibly 1.2 million displaced people. I think the number is probably more like 600,000 or 700,000. From inside Mosul will be displaced when the actual campaign gets underway. So, yeah, we're looking at a looming military conflict, an escalating refugee displaced people's situation. So we're trying to figure out ways that we can pioneer and serve in a very practical way moving forward in a Christ-like, compassionate, gospel-rooted way that would put us right in the heart of the, probably what is the most severe human misery on the planet right now in terms of what's going on in the Levant between the Syrian civil war and the whole issue of the Islamic State.
All right, when you talk about this severe human suffering, massive number of displaced families, individuals, the needs being far, far greater than the ability to meet those needs, just paint a picture for me of how some of these families are living.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll highlight one community in particular, and that being the Yazidis. You know, I think all of us watched, you know, CNN footage of, Sinjar Mountain, Shingal area. It's the northern Iraq, right on the border of Syria. It's an ethnic Kurdish community, but it is one of the most isolated and closed religious communities on the earth. Joshua Project used to have them at the top of the list, you know, of unreached, unengaged, isolated peoples. They were the target of the Islamic State in the early days, August 3rd, August 4th, when the genocide happened. You know, the UN has confirmed around 100 mass graves, and, you know, on a daily basis we interact with family members of those whose families were either executed in the genocide or who are still missing. And so, you know, yesterday we were in a makeshift camp with seven Yazidi families in one house, and all of them have girls, daughters, mothers, sisters who are still inside, somewhere between Mosul and Raqqa, somewhere in the Islamic State, and they're hoping that maybe one day they'll see them again, but they're not sure. And so I think the Yazidi community is probably hit the hardest because of the religious ethnic schisms there. You know, I think there was Shiite Kurds suffered immensely under the Islamic State, and you know, so a lot of people are critical of the situation because it seems as though governments aren't taking proper care of Christian refugees. And you know, as one who's here on the ground, that kind of bothers me because there just aren't that many Christians here. The vast majority of the people affected. It's my point is that it's not strange that Christians aren't prominent receiving care. The point is that the vast majority of the people who've been suffering under the Islamic State are either Shiites, Muslims, Arabs, Kurds, or Yazidis. And so there was a large Christian community that's been driven out of the Levant, but they were still a minority. And I make that point because I think this is the most open door we've ever had to serve some of the most isolated, suffering, brainwashed people groups in the earth. In terms of Syria and Iraq, these peoples have suffered immensely through Islamic persecution, even within the House of Islam, you know, between the Sunni-Shiite divide and now the Yazidi suffering at the hands of ISIS. It's incredible suffering, and you don't have words to talk about it because of the magnitude and the depth and the scope of it and how many people have been affected. And I think the worst part about it is that no one will ever be brought to justice for it. There won't be a Nuremberg trial. There won't be people held accountable. There won't be, you know, there won't be indictments. The ICC won't be involved. It'll be very minimal. And I think that's probably the worst part about it, is that history will just barrel on.
And Dalton, as you're in the midst of this, and again, you're conveying things in words as best as you can, but we can't imagine what they've gone through, the families, the girls sold into sex slavery, then they escaped just to commit suicide because of the shame they live with and the torment and terror of the parents. But we've just got a little over a minute before the break. You're there as Christians, wife and four kids. People see that. They see you're coming to a dangerous part of the world. They have to understand you're there out of love. What do they say to you? Do they ask, why are you here? Or what's their response to your family?
Incredible love, incredible warmth and affection. It's astounding. There is no more wider, a more effectual open door in the world right now than there is in the Levant. The risks are real. The crisis is real. The dangers are real. But the open door, I don't think history has ever seen anything like this ever in the Islamic world in terms of the openness that we have. And my kids are probably the most Facebooked people in the world. We can't go anywhere without people taking pictures of these little chubby-faced, little, you know, blonde-haired, fair-skinned kids. And no, we feel at home here. We feel loved, and taken care of. Our neighbors are all Peshmerga, and we feel safer here than I do in the U.S., to be honest.
Amazing. All right, Dalton, we come back. I want to talk about the new video, City of the Great King. Friends, this is powerful. This focuses on Jerusalem. It's eye-opening, the spiritual and even end-time significance of Jerusalem. And we've packaged it together with two special resources. We have interviews with others on the film, The City of the Great King. Together with the film, you can get the DVD or you can download it. And we've packaged it together with my lecture, Is Israel an Evil Occupier?, which is so eye-opening and deals with the key issues you get hit with day and night about Israel. So go to thelineoffire.org to order yours today. We'll be right back with Dalton Thomas, live from Iraq.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. We're going back to Iraq, live in Iraq. Dalton Thomas, the producer of the brand new film, The City of the Great King, part of the Covenant and Controversy series. Dalton, before we talk about the film itself, take a minute to explain why Jerusalem should matter to every believer in the world today.
I think that's the great ultimate question of the ages in many ways. You know, I think bottom line, Jerusalem matters because Jesus said it does. It doesn't really matter whether we think it matters or not. At the end of the day, Jesus has considerable, formidable, immutable zeal for the city of Jerusalem based on an irrevocable, eternal, binding covenant with covenantal provisions that cannot be ratified. It can't be changed. It can't be undone. It can't be modified. It has been ratified by his blood. It's been secured by his blood. So, I think on one level, there's lots of logical things that we can do to explain why it matters, but really, at the end of the day, it matters because the man that we love and worship, the man who bled for us, who died for us, who purchased us, saved us, he made promises to that city, and he's going to keep those promises. So to me, the issue of Jerusalem is not the issue of a city. It's really the issue of Jesus, because he has made promises to Jerusalem. So I think, you know, as we barrel on closer to the end of the age, as we approach the return of the Lord, whether that's 10 years from now or 100 years from now. I think it's closer than 100, but, who knows? Either way, the closer we get to that man splitting the sky, the more urgent, relevant, and pressing this whole issue of Jerusalem is going to be, because he's going to return and establish a government in Jerusalem. And if we oppose that on political, theological, moral grounds, we're going to find ourselves in an antagonistic relationship with Jesus, even though we profess to love, worship, and follow him. So bottom line to me, it's a Christological issue. It's the issue of Jesus, not the issue of geopolitics.
What makes this video, this new DVD, so powerful and compelling in your view? What's going to happen to the viewer? What are they going to experience? What's going to happen to their thinking, their mindset, as a result of watching this?
Well, my hope, I don't know if this will happen. This is my prayer, at least. I guess that's all I could say, is this is my hope and my prayer, is that people would ask different questions related to the issue of Jerusalem. Because I think in many circles today, the two loudest voices concerning Israel are, God, has, he has a new people and land doesn't matter, and he has, through the new covenant, he's created the church, and the old has passed away and is now obsolete, and supersessionism, replacement theology. On the other hand, you have very patriotic, nationalistic support of Israel that I think in many ways marginalizes the gospel, because it marginalizes the person and work of Jesus. And I think what we're trying to do through this series is to present a beautiful alternative, to kind of leave the argument room, so to speak, between those two voices and say, maybe there's another way. maybe the gospel points us to a different plane of thinking related to the issue of Jerusalem that's neither replacement supersession theology on the left or patriotic nationalism that's devoid of the gospel on the right. And so my hope is through the series as a whole, people would encounter the gospel implications, the Christological implications of this whole mystery of Israel that's so dominating the minds of the prophets and the apostles. And particularly this second installment in the series, The City of the Great King, hopefully this issue of Jerusalem, people begin to see it not as a land dispute issue or an issue of national borders and territories or modern contemporary geopolitics, but they begin to think of it in terms of Christology and the person and work of Jesus. Who is he? What is he like? What does he care about? What is he doing? Because to me, those are the questions we need to be asking. And when you get answers to those questions, you see Jerusalem very differently than you do if you're in one of the two dominant narratives of either replacement theology or nationalistic Zionism that marginalizes the gospel.
And who are some of the folks that appear on this video? Obviously, I'm on it and get to do some narration and answering questions. Who else is on this?
Yes, yeah, so it's a five-part series, so we're two films into it. This is the second film. We're going to do one each year, and each film will have a different, slightly different lineup. In this film, you were in it, which we're incredibly grateful for. We have such deep appreciation and affection for you and the way that you've pioneered this message. You know, we're really, in a way, standing in a continuum of what you've been saying for decades. Scott Volk, our dear brother, we're grateful for Scott. Joel Richardson is in it. He's a dear friend of ours. And then our core team it will be in all the films. So Stephanie Quick, our developer and producer, Michael Reynolds is also one of our core writers. And we've also had the privilege of some of our other friends, Samuel Whitfield, Stuart Greaves, Barry Horner, and Reggie Kelly contributing to it. And each film the interview that we shot for you, Dr. Brown, was to be exclusively for the first film, but there was so much good stuff in your interview that we as a writing team, we said, you know, we need to include some of what he said in the second film as well. So you snuck in there, Dr. Brown.
Snuck in, yeah, with a nice close-up of my mustache, too, throughout it. I did notice that. Yeah, and Dalton, it's interesting, and we've just got little over a minute before we're done here, but it's interesting that you, without a physical or historic connection to Israel and the Jewish people, because of your devotion to Jesus and the Word of God, have gotten a tremendous burden for Israel and for Jerusalem.
Yeah.
So this is
great.
Yeah, this is something that has flowed out then, not of this super patriotic Zionistic nationalism, but out of love for God and love for Jesus, it's put this love for Israel and the Jewish people in your heart, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, and that's not to say that I'm not, politically, I don't support the state of Israel. I love the state of Israel. I support it politically,
yep.
If Jesus was not king. But he is king, and that matters.
Yeah, absolutely does. All right, friends, the DVD, brand new, just being released. That's why we set it up today to have Dalton coming your way from Iraq, The City of the Great King, focused on Jerusalem. It's the second of a three-part series, but it is the one that stands alone just on Jerusalem. When you order it, we're going to include some special interviews with different ones who participated in the filming of this. And along with that, my lecture at the University of South Florida is Israel and Evil Occupier. And along with that, of course, you get the DVD of The City of the Great King. So remember, you can order these on DVD and CD, or you can just go to the website, thelineoffire.org, and you can download everything. So within the day, you can be watching this at home and sharing it with friends. So take advantage of this, friends. Israel, The City of the Great King, Jerusalem. This is what we need to understand in God's eternal purposes. Go to thelineoffire.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We have a question here from Ken Karpowitz. He has a question about health care. Ken?
I'd like to know, Anderson, why aren't you bringing up the emails? I'd like to know. Why aren't you getting
to the
bottom?
Emails.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. And it hasn't been finished at all.
Ken Karpowitz has a question.
It's nice to one on three.
All right. Again, from the debate last night, America continues to descend to new levels of low. People referred to the circus last night. I basically said exactly what I was expecting. And, yeah, if Hillary Clinton won the first debate, Donald Trump won the second debate, if you have to pick which one you want to win, you win the second because people are going to remember what happened last. And obviously you want to win the third. But I would say the candidates were who they were, with their strengths, with their weaknesses. 866-348-7884. So we return from Iraq and Jerusalem. We return to the United States and the presidential elections. 866-34-TRUTH. A few quick questions for you. Number one, if you're a Trump supporter, were you put off at all by this revelation of these tapes, or this tape from 2005 and the vulgar comments he made about women and things like that? Were you put off by that? Were you satisfied with his apology? How did you feel about the way he handled things during the debate? 866-34-TRUTH. Again, I was not in the least bit surprised to hear the vulgar, despicable comments. I figured that's exactly who he was, especially 11 years ago. Has he changed since? Has he changed a lot? Has he changed a little? That's another question. But I was not the least bit surprised to hear that. In fact, if you asked me, do such tapes exist? Or better, did he have those kinds of conversations with people, whether recorded or not? I would have said, well, of course, that's the kind of guy he is, or was at least, and the kind of guy he boasted about being. Did anyone think anything differently about that? If 10 years ago I said, Donald Trump, think Donald Trump, what comes to mind? You might say builder or entrepreneur or whatever. When was The Apprentice on? How long ago? I don't know. But if that was on, reality TV star, or you might have said ruthless or worldly or greedy or whatever, or self-centered, but you wouldn't have said saintly. Yeah, when I hear Donald Trump, I think immediately saintly. Nobody would have thought that way. So it's not the least surprise. I'm surprised that people are surprised. I'm surprised that people supporting him, political leaders and Christian leaders, are like, oh, we're mortified. Didn't you expect that this was part of his past? The only question is, how does he handle it today? So I'm curious about that. If you were a Trump supporter, and were you surprised by the tapes? Were you put off by them? Do you feel satisfied about the way he handled them? Listen, during the debate, if he said this, look, I'm ashamed of that comments. That's not who I am anymore. Yeah, I was that kind of guy. That's who I used to be. Everybody knows that. No surprise in that whatsoever. And then he said, and look, I didn't actually do any of these things. I simply said them. It was just talk. Okay. But I despise the talk rather than writing it off as, quote, locker room talk. That'd be another issue. So there are better ways he could have dismissed it last night and basically said, hey, that's who I was. It's not who I've been for years. Talk to my family. Talk to my friends. You'll see that clearly. But having said that, are you ready to move on? Or are you ready to drop out? We're going to get back to that and a bunch of other things. 866-348-7884. We will be right back with your calls and a bunch more comments and clips on the other side of the break.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to get your calls in a moment about last night's debate. Again, it seemed pretty self-evident to me that Donald Trump won, that the moderators really tried to be unbiased, clearly teamed up against him. And in fact, you have this remarkable exchange. Grab clip number 14, JJ. It's quite remarkable where one of the moderators is actually getting into a debate with Trump, going back and forth about certain points. And I thought, this is just wild. And like Nancy said to me today, that it seemed in the past that there was some pretense of impartiality, but now it's just all out go after him from the liberal media. And here's what's really interesting. Number to call, 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. There is the theory that I heard during the primaries that Trump was getting massive airtime, that Trump was getting massive publicity through the secular media, through the liberal media, and this was quite intentional so that he would win the primary and become the Republican candidate, and by becoming the Republican candidate would be the easiest one that Hillary Clinton could defeat. And therefore, the liberal media propped him up. There's even the theory that this was part of the Clinton strategy, etc., and that this has now been released allegedly through WikiLeaks, if you believe what's being said there, and what happens is that he gets propped up, and after being propped up, is then shot down by this very same media. Is it true? Could it be? Let me just say this. I questioned it before. I wonder about it now. All right, let's listen to clip 13 from the debate last night.
If she had a chance to do something with Syria, they had a chance, and that was the line.
What do you think will happen if Aleppo falls?
I think Aleppo is a disaster humanitarian-wise.
What do you think will happen if it falls?
I think that it basically has fallen, okay? It basically has fallen. Let me tell you something. You take a look at Mosul. The biggest problem I have with the stupidity of our foreign policy. We have Mosul. They think a lot of the ISIS leaders are in Mosul. So we have announcements coming out of Washington and coming out of Iraq. We will be attacking Mosul in 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Well, all of these bad leaders from ISIS are leaving Mosul. Why can't they do it quietly? Why can't they do the attack, make it a sneak attack, and after the attack is made, inform the American public that we've knocked out the leaders, we've had a tremendous success. People leave. Why do they have to say we're going to be attacking Mosul within the next 4 to 6 weeks, which is what they're saying? How stupid is our country?
All right. So Donald Trump makes that point. Okay. So if Hillary Clinton wants to respond to it, fine. But look at what now happens. Clip number 15. Listen to what now happens with the moderator and with Donald Trump.
There are sometimes reasons the military does that. Psychological warfare.
I can't think of any.
It might be to help get civilians out.
And we have, look, I have 200 generals and admirals who endorse me. I have 21 Congressional Medal of Honor recipients who endorse me. We talk about it all the time. They understand. Why can't they do something secretively where they go in and they knock out the leadership? Why would these people stay there? I've been reading now.
Tell
for
me
weeks.
What your strategy is.
That's just remarkable. He makes his point. Why are we announcing it? And the moderator says, well, there are reasons for it. You don't do that as a moderator. Wow. It's one thing if someone's not answering the question to come back to it, but to argue the point or to answer the point that was being made by the person debate, you got to be kidding me. And look, here's the deal. This works in favor of Donald Trump. It works in his favor. Well, now, look, there's a better way, having been in debates and been in live TV and hostile settings. There's a way where you can show that you are being taken advantage of, being the victim, that's not whiny, there's a better way to do it. If you do it with more humility and with more grace, just like, boy, it kind of feels like 3-on-1 here or something like that, you can even get more sympathy. But this is not going to help the anti-Trump people to be so obviously biased against him. He has enough issues, enough flaws, enough questionable judgments and questions about character. You can hit on that, but once you start to do it in this way, in my opinion, it only makes things seem worse. 866-348-7884. Before I go to the phones, Ted Cruz has criticized NBC, saying you've had these tapes for months now. You had this tape with Donald Trump speaking to Billy Bush for months. Why just release it now? What would seem the reason, with Washington Post, which is hostile to Donald Trump, the reason for releasing it now is to release it now to undermine his candidacy. but at least be forthright about it. Say, hey, we're doing this strategically. 866-34-TRUTH. Again, here's where I'm at. Under no circumstances will I vote for Hillary Clinton, period. That's settled, unless she repents and becomes a different person. And she reemphasized again last night, loud and clear, that she is opposed to Donald Trump's selections for Supreme Court because these people want to overturn Roe v. Wade and want to overturn the Obergefell decision, which redefined marriage. So she's making clear, you're a conservative Christian, she's against you. She said, oh, there's room for everyone. You know, she wants to be the president for everyone and everyone's welcome. Yeah, what about her saying that our religious beliefs would have to change concerning abortion and concerning same-sex, quote, marriage? What about that? And Donald Trump's stuck with his guns, saying that he would appoint justices in the image of Scalia. And that, in fact, he's given a list of over 20 already. So good for him staying with that. My position remains what it's been for some time. Under no circumstances could I vote for Hillary Clinton, and I urge every person who loves the Lord and loves the unborn and loves marriage and family not to vote for Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump still has to earn my vote because I have enough misgivings concerning him that I'm still hesitant to vote for him. Would I end up just voting for the platform and hoping he would uphold it? That's a possibility. In other words, I vote Republican because of the platform. I'm still processing it. Again, just me. You have to come to your own conclusions as well. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Boston, Massachusetts. Denise, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon, Dr. Brown. I've listened to you for years, and I have a comment. When they brought out those tapes from 2005 regarding Donald Trump, I say to myself, do these people understand what does a past mean in context? And if you look at some of the most outstanding biblical characters, namely David, he was a murderer, he committed adultery, and yet God said he was a man after his own heart. And this is because David was willing to go in and lay hold of the horns of the altar. And Donald Trump responded with the allegations, which he said was true. He said that was locker room talk. And I was like, oh, yeah, right, it was locker room talk. He is not a Christian, but he acknowledged it was locker room talk, and they're building a gallows for him, and sad to say, I believe that very gallows that they're building, they're going to hang on it themselves.
Yeah, Denise, let me say a few things. First, you're absolutely right. It was the past. And why should anybody be surprised? Isn't that who we knew he was? Again, that's my whole point. Fine, they're despicable comments. They're degrading to women. They're ugly. They're indefensible. Fine. But how could anybody not know that that's who he was? That's one thing. Now, regarding King David, I wrote an article. You can read it at stream.org. We posted it yesterday afternoon. What King David could teach Donald Trump. What God says about David, he was a man after God's own heart, except for this matter of the adultery with Bathsheba and the murder of Uriah. Remember, he's the king. He could just snap his fingers and do more than most of us could do if we tried our hardest to do it. So too much is given, much is required as well. But you can also do a lot that people only dream about doing. But it's because he was so close to God that he could write the Psalms and all these other things. So let's not make Donald Trump into David in terms of he wrote the Psalms or anything like that. But let Donald Trump learn from King David, because Denise, as you rightly said, David was smitten with contrition. And let him utterly renounce this. If this comes up again, let him in the clearest, most humble posture say it was wrong. And yeah, it was locker room talk. Guys talk like that, but it's wrong. And I've realized how wrong that whole culture is. And I want to set a better example. I want to set the example of a married man who loves his wife and is faithful to his wife and honors women and loves kids and raises them in a solid family. I want to be an example that you can look at and be proud of. And forgive me for the past. You watch who I am and who I'll be. That's the way to move forward, is it not? God gives grace to the humble. And you do it without pointing a finger at anyone else. Denise, thank you. And thanks for being a long-term listener.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We're going to move on to Syria. Both of you have mentioned that.
She said a lot of things. I think we should
Mr. Trump, we're going to go on. This is about the audience.
Because she has been a disaster as a senator.
Mr. Trump, we're going to move on.
I was against the war in Iraq. Has not been debunked. And you voted for it, and you shouldn't have. Well, I just want
to say... There's been lots of fact-checking on that. I'd like to move on to an online question.
She just went about 25 seconds over her time. Could I just respond to this, please?
Very quickly, please.
You know what's funny? She went over a minute over, and you don't stop her. When I go 1 second over, it's like
a big deal. You had many answers.
It's really very interesting.
We've got a question.
Oh, boy. Let me say this. Donald Trump did interrupt more than Hillary did. Their overall speaking time was almost identical. He just got a few seconds longer. I heard a summary of it at the end, but the overall speaking time was almost identical. His interruption, you don't want to interrupt. It makes you look bad. It makes you look obnoxious. The less you do it, the better. There might be a time here and there to get a little word in or to correct or to just challenge something, but it's best to do it with your time. And if you feel you're not getting to respond, say, hey, some things were said. I do need to respond to this. It's important that the American people hear the truth, and there are better ways to do it. But again, overall, I think it was a clear victory for Donald Trump. But that's who he is. In other words, you saw him on display last night. That's who he is. He just did much, much better than the first debate. And personally, for me, when I didn't see all the first debate, but when Donald Trump would say things about Hillary Clinton, she had a smile on her face that I thought was effective. Last night, I felt the opposite. I felt that it seemed demeaning the whole time, and it wore on me, actually. Again, just my feeling. I think others felt the same as well, but just giving my feeling. In other words, and I'm just talking here as a debater myself, and I watch looking at issues, but I can't help watch without thinking about debate issues and how to do things and what's best and what's worst. And it just seemed to me that her attitude did not help. That when serious charges are brought against you and you have a certain kind of fixed smile on your face that really seems demeaning to others, degrading to Donald Trump, and fine, you could be incredulous of what he's saying. There's just a way to do it, because you know the camera's on you. And it seemed that to just dismiss everything he said was lies, that gets old at a certain point. Again, just my impression. 866-348-7884. Let's go to Charlotte. All right, we won't. There. All right, let's try to reconnect with Joe in Charlotte, North Carolina. We just lost him on one line, picked him up on another. And we're ready to go as soon as you get him back. Tell you what, let's play one more clip. Grab number, let's see, number seven. JJ, grab clip number seven. This is Hillary Clinton after the debate. And you could see she did not sound exactly triumphant and confident. Number seven.
You know, I pretty much saw what I expected to see. And that's why, you know, the first thing I said was this is... something that I've been saying since June, that he's not fit to be president and commander-in-chief.
Obviously, that's her big talking point. He's not fit, and that's the fear and the concern. And it could be that she tried to sound triumphant and portray things. Maybe it just didn't come across in that clip. Obviously, she said we did great. But again, to me, it just didn't seem as self-confident. Again, my reading of it. 866-34-TRUTH. So we go to Joe in Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. I've listened to you for several years. Really, really enjoy every time I'm able to hear you. Respect how you present things on the radio. I felt like last night was a draw. Felt like they were both were a little bit off their game. And considering the tenor of things going into the debate was, they both seemed a little, almost shaken. But I, some of the comments you've made, I've been, concerned by Christian leaders, who just seem to be so beholden to, the Republican Party, and conservatism that they just can't bring themselves to denounce this guy, for what he is. And he's a despicable guy. And he can't be trusted. I'm no Hillary fan, but I think standing on the whole abortion issue and sort of selling our souls for Supreme Court nominees is just not, you know, George Bush was in office for 8 years and we didn't overturn Roe v. Wade. So to put Donald Trump in the White House simply for hoping he'll please everybody with Supreme Court nominees, I just think is the wrong path to go down.
Yeah, and let me say this, Joe. You would pretty much articulate what Nancy, what my wife, my bride of 40-plus years, says. What you said is her position, that she won't vote for Hillary, of course. But she feels people in that sense are selling their soul. She feels that Donald Trump could even do more harm than Hillary Clinton. Now, we differ on that. She and I have been chatting about that lately quite passionately. We differ on that. But her concern is that the person that Donald Trump is, that his character, that the way he could degrade America, that he could degrade the office of the president, that him continuing to be who he is could be more dangerous in certain ways than having Hillary Clinton in. Now, again, we differ on that, but I understand that. And Joe, if my own wife feels this way, obviously I would say there's credibility to what you're saying as well. And look, I'm looking at a letter from Jerry Falwell Jr. He said the comments Mr. Trump made 11 years ago were deplorable. I condemn them entirely. I also find Hillary Clinton's support of partial birth abortion criminal. Her opinion of evangelicals to be bigoted. There's only one difference between the two. Mr. Trump promises to support religious liberty and the dignity of the unborn. Mrs. Clinton promises she will not. I believe the release of the tape was planned and timed, as Jerry Falwell said. But my concern is that Jerry Falwell Jr., with all respect to him and leading Liberty and the great job he does at that, is that when he presented Donald Trump at Liberty, he presented him as if he was almost St. Donald and spoke of the wonderful qualities. That, to me, was the failure. If he said, look, we understand this man's not a Christian. He may think he is, but he's not. We understand he's got a real checkered past, and he may still have a checkered present, but we believe God's raising him up. Like Cyrus, who was a pagan king and didn't know God. God said, although you don't know me, I'm using you. And we just believe that God's raising him up to shake the political system. And with all of his failings and weaknesses, we believe God's raising him up to stand for religious liberty, to stand for the unborn. And by the way, I actually believe Trump would do it. In other words, if elected, I believe he would appoint the right Supreme Court justices. He's been unwavering in that. And I believe he would stand up for Christians because he admires us, but you got to do it in a way where you don't sell your soul. Joe, I'm totally with you on that. Friends, my bottom line, put your trust in God, not in man. Vote, get involved, put your trust in God. We'll talk presidential politics and we'll talk apologetics on the Line of Fire today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on The Line of Fire today. 866-348-7884. What a weekend it has been. And that's why it's my joy to serve you the beginning of every week and every day, every weekday, to be here to serve you, to help equip you, to help bring clarity to issues, to help provide a voice of clarity, a voice of reason, a voice of scriptural truth to help do that. And whatever we can do to help equip you for the battle, whatever we can do to help equip you to stand strong in the midst of the storm, whatever we can do to equip you to be a blessing, it is our joy to do it. It's what our team lives to do, to help you, to equip you. When we are pushing, got to put out another video, got to put out another article, got to have the radio as sharp as can be, it's not because we're trying to accomplish something in ourselves. We're seeking to glorify the Lord and help you and be a blessing to you. So hopefully we can help bring some clarity. We can help bring peace of heart and mind. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. I'm going to take a few minutes with a special guest after this first break, and then I'm going to talk presidential politics and hopefully give you some more redemptive thoughts on that as well. But I want to start here. Be at peace in your heart that Jesus is Lord and God the Father sits enthroned, and that all authority in heaven and earth belongs to the Son of God. And he has sent us in his name to do his work and to accomplish his will. Now look, I live in a state of holy tension because of the feeling of pain for a dying world, the feeling of pain for a messed up world, the concern that America is like a bus filled with 330 million people about to crash, about to go careening off a cliff and crash and burn. I live with that concern, that weight, that burden, and yet with this absolute confidence that our God is God, that he is King, and that as we seek his face, that all things are possible. And that no matter what happens with the elections, if Hillary Clinton is elected and it's the worst case scenario, that she becomes the most aggressive president in our nation's history, even more aggressive than President Obama, pro-abortion, pro-homosexual activism, anti-religious liberty, and perhaps beyond. Worst case scenario, the words of Jesus still remain true, that he will build his church, he will build his congregation, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. That remains true. And it remains true if Donald Trump is elected and everybody's worst fears are realized, and that he's just out of control and he makes a mess of the office of the White House. Yeah, President Clinton made a mess and degraded with his sexual antics. And there's another way that Donald Trump could potentially make a mess. Even if it's the worst case scenario, God can still use this to wake up his church. God can still use this to advance the gospel. So, yes, I'm concerned about the elections. No, I will not vote for Hillary Clinton. Yes, Donald Trump still could win my vote. But my confidence is in the living God, knowing that the biggest issue is not who is president. The biggest issue is, are God's people awake and alert and doing his will? We come back. We're going to talk Christian apologetics for women? Really? Oh, you bet. And then we'll get back to presidential politics.
Oh, God of burning, cleansing flame, send.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. And I'm just going through my papers here. You know, when we think about defense of the faith, when we think about apologetics, and you start to name names of people who are leaders, you think of some of the guests we've had on in recent days, Norman Geisler and J. Warner Wallace, Frank Turek and James White and Ravi Zacharias and Sean McDowell, Josh McDowell, others like that, William Lane Craig, I'm on that list. But you notice the list is all male. Yeah. So Southern Evangelical Seminary is having a special day of apologetics for women. A special day of apologetics for women, October 13th. And then the apologetics conference itself is going to be on the 14th and the 15th. It's called the Defense Never Rests. So again, this is October 13th for women only, and then October 14th and 15th. I've had the pleasure of speaking at this quite a few times, and I'm about to speak with Diana Newman. She's a member of TEAM, which is the missions arm of Southern Evangelical Seminary, and she travels nationally and internationally to speak at universities, churches, women's conferences, and community events. Her passion is to equip college and university students to defend their faith while on the secular campus or in the marketplace. But Diana is not just going to talk in general about defense of the faith and being strong students on campuses and things like that. She's going to speak specifically at this all-day women's conference. So, Diana, welcome to The Line of Fire. Great to have you on the air today.
It's great to be with you, Michael.
So tell us about women and apologetics. I mentioned just a moment ago before you're on the air that when you think of all of the speakers, the lead speakers at the apologetics conference through the years, virtually all of them are men. For whatever reason, you don't normally think apologetics and women, and yet that makes no sense at all, because women have as much influence in the world and society as men do. Women often have more influence over the kids in the home, and women are going to get hit with the same objections that men do. So why do you think we don't think women when we think apologetics?
Well, I think, number one, I think you've hit it on the head. The first thing that usually comes to our mind when we think of apologetics is we automatically just think of men, because that's who we kind of see in our regular day-to-day. But I would contend that women are probably some of the best defenders, if you will, of their points. And you can kind of just even think about that in a practical sense of the term. Women are able to articulate differently than men. They see things differently than men. They're able to make different types of arguments than men are, and I just think that women, as the case is for a lot of social movements, the case is such that women tend to kind of come to these things second, but once they do come to them, they really do show their worth.
Yeah, and, you know, when people talk about my debating skills, my wife Nancy's not impressed with them. She holds her own.
And, yeah.
But, you know, the fact is, right, there's no reason. It's not like naturally the strongest people in the world will be males, because men are made physically a certain way, and then only women can give birth to children because of the way God constituted women. There's nothing fundamental about the male or female constitution that says that apologetics should primarily be male. So it is time for women to rise up, especially with the homeschooling movement. It's primarily the moms who are preparing the kids who are going off to public school or going off to secular university. So moms really need to be equipped.
Absolutely. And I think just very practically as well, it just tends to be the case that a lot of kids spend more time with their mothers than they do with men for different reasons, different factors. But it's also true that the cultural war that is going on today, the issues that are happening today, certainly a lot of the issues that are coming to bear right here in the city of Charlotte, a lot of times it's the mothers that are spending quality time with the kids, and they have to be able to speak to truth. They have to be able to demonstrate what it looks like to defend Christian faith in the midst of a culture that's hostile.
Right, absolutely. And of course, I fully understand that women are functioning outside of the home as well, and are in the business world or in the educational world, et cetera. But as we focus just for a moment on that absolutely crucial central role of women in the home with their kids, spending that extra time together, yeah, how much more? And so the kids are getting bombarded with social media. The kids are getting hit with all kinds of things. Maybe they're in public school or Christian school that's kind of worldly. They're taking in other stuff. The mother is going to be the primary filter on a daily basis, or maybe the first one to catch things and notice things. And just a slight aside, and then I want to come back to women. When we think of apologetics, it's not only male, but it also tends to be white. And again, there's no good reason for that. Why do you think that is, and how can we address that?
Well, a lot of the issues and such that are confronting different communities, they're specific to communities. They're more nuanced in more communities than other communities. In the very same way, as you've just mentioned, that the faith has been a male faith, it has predominantly been a white faith, but this is not to say that there haven't been African Americans confronting different issues. It just seems to be the case that a lot of the issues that are happening in the African American culture are kept within the culture, within closed doors, if you will. But I think the time is past time now where a lot of the issues that are uniquely confronting the African American culture are coming to bear in society at a large. And so it does behoove those of us who've been equipped, those of us who maybe have a more visible platform, to begin talking about those things, because not only are they spilling out of our community per se, but they're just kind of coming to bear, if you will, on the culture and on everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. All right, so October 13th, this is going to be the first of its kind at the annual massive apologetics conference sponsored by Southern Evangelical Seminary. Still time to register, folks, or around the world. You can stream online. You can register to stream online all around the country if you can't make it out physically. But the conference, the main part for everyone, October 14th, 15th, but for the first time ever, there is for ladies only, October 13th. That's this coming Thursday. Yes. And you're going to teach on Does Christianity Oppress Women? And Critiquing Feminist Criticism of the Bible. Let's tackle that first one. We've got about 2 minutes before the break. What are you going to cover in Does Christianity Oppress Women?
Well, both Nora and Hale and I will be doing a joint talk very quickly. This talk was not decided. The title wasn't decided by us. We were actually challenged to a discussion by one of the local universities in this area, who, of course, would have been taking the affirmative position that Christianity does oppress women. Long story short, we prepared for the debate for about 3 or 4 months, and just a week before a week before the discussion was set to take place, they backed out of it because they said that we knew too much about the Bible. And so because of all of the preparation that we had already done, Nora and I decided to continue the discussion, and now we present that at different conferences, church events, and those sorts of things. To model to women what it looks like to have discussion about some very important things, but as well to model to them what it looks like as a woman to defend Christian faith.
Excellent. All right, friends, to find out more, go to ses.edu. There's still time to register. If you live within a few hours, just plan on coming out. And ladies, come on. Take advantage of this. You say, I'm busy at home, can't make it. You can register to live stream from wherever you are, starting Thursday, then Friday and Saturday. Hey, we still just have a few seconds before the break. How did you get interested in this subject?
Well, I became interested in apologetics really through my undergraduate experience, Michael, doing a double major in psychology and sociology, and being confronted with what at that time I didn't know, but was basically materialism and naturalism and atheism and skepticism and all of those other things. And so being confronted with those things, I had to quickly find a way how to defend my Christian faith. I found out later what apologetics was, but it was necessary for me in the classroom to be able to think about these things a little bit more deeply, and that really started my love for apologetics. And then when it comes to the issues particular to women, that is just a result of living in the culture and seeing the assault.
Got it. Yeah, you know, it's like me, Diana. We had to do apologetics before we knew what it was. We had to learn to swim before we knew what swimming was. All right, we'll be right back with Diana Newman.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. In a few minutes, we are going to switch over to presidential politics, the elections, and my reflections on the debate and some constructive thoughts that I have moving forward. 866-348-7884. We'll be taking your calls. But apologetics, the defense of the faith, so very, very important. And we've been featuring different guests, all of whom are speaking at the National Apologetics Conference beginning right in Charlotte, North Carolina, this Thursday with a special day for women only, and then on Friday and Saturday. My guest, Diana Newman, who is part of the team at Southern Evangelical Seminary and holds an MA from SES in apologetics and philosophy. She'll also be presenting on Friday on navigating feminist theology. To find out more, go to ses.edu, but the clock is ticking. Diana, how much has feminist thinking influenced our culture today? A woman growing up today, how different is her worldview, positively or negatively, because of feminism, her view of family, her view of herself? How has it changed over the last generation?
Oh my goodness, it's been saturated by feminism, whether she thinks about it or not. Feminism, if we're to judge a social movement by its success, how well it's been integrated into a culture, feminism has been extremely, extremely successful, so that today we assume certain things, certain feminist premises. We assume that they're true right from the outset, and it becomes we are placed in a box. Anyone is placed in a box when they even question the feminist starting position. That's how much it's kind of saturated the culture today.
So what are some of the negative effects in terms of how God wants a woman to see herself, how God wants a woman to see motherhood and other aspects of what it means to be a woman? How does God want a woman to see herself versus how do feminists want a woman to see herself?
Well, if I were to sum it up, I would just say that God desires for us to see ourselves as women, period. A lot of the feminist movement and its ideology and even its effects encourages women in different ways to devalue what it means to be a woman. And it encourages women to compete with men as if it's not enough just to be a woman. I think that feminism has been the single most detrimental social movement to women. Ironically, it's supposed to be a helper of women, but it's just devalued what it even means to be a woman. Certainly in the areas that are uniquely female, when it comes to childbearing, when it comes to mothering, when it comes to the role and the strength that it is to be a wife, all of those things are devalued in a feminist paradigm.
And you talk about feminist theology. So how does this now work out in terms of reading the scripture? And when you do your session on navigating feminist theology, what are you going to deal with?
Well, I'm going to deal with this idea that God is a misogynist, that God hates women. I'm going to deal with the idea that apparently, because the Bible uses a lot of male language, that God is more privy to men than to women. I'm going to deal with why Jesus is a problem for a lot of feminists, because of course Jesus is the one that comes in to save the world, that comes in to save a woman, and feminists have a hard problem with Jesus on that front. So I'm going to be dealing with a lot of the things that people assume to be true about feminism as that relates to the theological implication.
So you say that feminism is supposed to help women, but actually hurts women. Mm-hmm. So in what respect are women hurt? The argument would be now they're liberated, now they're equals, now they have equal opportunity in the workplace. We have the potential of a woman president, and the sky's the limit for women. They've been liberated from just being reproducers and subjugated to men. How has it actually hurt women rather than helped them?
Well, I'll just use a brief example. If we're talking about the sexual revolution, free love, you know, women ought to be able to do the exact same things that men can do quite easily. One of the results of the sexual revolution was the uptake in the contraceptive movement, and throughout the last four decades, we've had a lot of different birth control devices, hormonal things that have come in to basically allow women to be as sexual as they would like to be, as it were. But now we're coming to understand and find out that those things have been quite harmful to women physically, mentally, psychologically. All of these things have been a result of the sexual revolution, if you will, and that was right on the heels of the feminist movement. It has not been as advantageous to women as the common culture would like to portray it's been.
And Diana, where do we get the idea that God discriminates based on sex?
That idea, I would say, would come out of the feminist movement. When you approach the Bible with feminist premises right from the very start, you will come out getting exactly what you want to see out of the text. But if you approach the text with proper hermeneutics, if you approach the text with a proper understanding of who God is as a spiritual being, as neither male nor female, but his role and his interactions with humanity can be characterized as either male or feminine, depending on what he's doing. When you understand that God is not a man and he's not a woman, you understand, you know, the creation account where Eve is a special creation, where you understand that, contrary to popular opinion, sin did not enter the world through Eve. Romans talks about it came through the man. When you understand and read the Bible properly in a hermeneutic sense, then there's really no legitimate way for thinking that God, as the creator of a special woman, hates his special creation.
Ah, so it's reading it through wrong lenses that then caused the Bible to be accused of being a misogynist book, or the God of the Bible to be a misogynist God. When read rightly, there's great dignity for men and for women, both created in the image of God and with unique roles. And the attack on those unique roles then is the very thing that diminishes. So that which is supposed to liberate ends up bringing people into bondage. Diana, I appreciate it. You can hear more of Diana Newman as a woman October 13th at the Women's Only Day at the annual Apologetics Conference. And then everyone can hear her on the 14th as she gives a presentation again. So find out more by going to ses.edu. But just a few more days, the conference starts this Thursday, and then Friday and Saturday for everyone, Thursday for women only. Remember, you can still register. There's still time to do that. And if you can't make it out physically, if you live in different parts of the country or the world, you can live stream the entire conference. Hey, Diana, it's great to get to know you by phone. Look forward to meeting you face-to-face. Keep up the great job.
Thank you. You as well, Michael. I appreciate it.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. We switch gears to presidential politics. Oh, yes, we do. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, thanks for joining us on the line of fire. Presidential politics, how can we avoid that subject? But as always, we'll come at it in a redemptive way with a kingdom perspective, not caught up in partisan politics, but stepping back, seeking to get the heart and mind of the Lord, and then speaking into the situation. 866-348-7884. Joe Scarborough had this to say, clip number 10. He's commenting on the second debate. This is the Morning Joe show. Joe Scarborough is anything but a fervent supporter of Donald Trump and the Republican Party. Listen to what he had to say.
I think there are a couple of things that people in the press may not want to admit, but it was plainly evident watching it on TV last night. Number one, it was Donald Trump's most effective debate performance to date. There's not a close second. Just not a close second. Secondly, despite the fact she had an unprecedented cheering section of the media, the fact is, for somebody watching, and people will see this if they go back and watch it again today, or if they see parts of it a week from now or a month from now, Hillary Clinton was on the defensive most of the night. She seemed unsure of herself most of the night. And he dominated the second debate in the same way she dominated the first debate.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's my assessment as well. He may have even done better in the second debate than she did in the first, which is all the more interesting because he was massively going to be on the defensive because of the videotape that was released from 2005 with his vile sexual comments about women. I said this earlier in the show, but for those just tuning in now, I want to restate this. I'm not in the least bit surprised by those vile comments. That's exactly who I thought Donald Trump was, especially in 2005. Has he changed since? I hope so. Don't know it, but I hope so. Is he less a vile person in those ways now than he was then? I hope so. But the fact that he was like that 11 years ago, that's not the least surprise. My concern is, how does he deal with it today? Does he humble himself? How does he repent? How does he set himself apart from who that person was? You know, Americans are very forgiving. If you say, I blew it, I was a complete jerk, an idiot, I'm ashamed of it. Call it locker room talk or whatever. It's inappropriate. No, I didn't do those things, but yeah, it's locker room talk. It's completely inappropriate. It's ugly, and I renounce it. That's not who I've been for years. My wife can tell you that. My kids can tell you that. My friends can tell you that. That's where they're playing a tape from 11 years ago, if that's the case that he has changed. And by God's grace, I'm going to set a very different example or just watch and see who I am. Yeah, that's who I was, but it's not who I am, and that's not the man you're voting for. You're voting for the man I am today. That would have been the way to respond to it. Let's play one more clip from Morning Joe, clip number 11. Again, Joe Scarborough commenting on the second debate.
This is the political reality that for the Republican base, Donald Trump delivered the attack against the Clinton machine that the Republican base in middle America have been waiting for years now. And so good luck being in Pensacola, Florida, saying, hey, I'm off of Donald Trump. Or saying in Kansas, oh, I'm not going to be for Donald Trump anymore. Especially when no Republican in America should have been surprised by what they heard on Friday.
Exactly. Nobody should have been surprised. That's why I've written an article that will be posted shortly. Why all the fuss over the Trump sex comments tape? As I say in the article, I'm not writing this to defend him or to convince people to vote for him. I'm saying to those who endorsed him, now like, oh, we're mortified or we can no longer support him. Who'd you think you were endorsing? Or who did you think the man was 11 years ago? That's what I don't get. Come on, it should have been self-evident from the start. No?
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm looking at a poll. I just tweeted this out from onenewsnow.com. And the question is, what's your reaction to the sexualized comments by Donald Trump recorded 11 years ago? And here are the choices. No surprise, but still better than Hillary. More hypocrisy from the left. Fair game. Hillary's trashing of Bill's victims. Never Trumpers vindicated. He had my vote, but not now. It's gut check time for me. Now, the poll just started, and it's just got its first, I mean, it's just moments ago. So it's got its first, 176 votes. But interestingly, he had my vote, but not now, and it's gut check time for me. Those are on the bottom. Those have the least. Never Trumpers vindicated, fair game, Hillary's trashing of Bill's victims. That's next up from the bottom. So those between them have like 13% of the votes, 14%. Then almost 30%, more hypocrisy from the left. And then over 56%, no surprise, but still better than Hillary. So that's interesting. That's interesting. I did a poll on my Twitter account yesterday. So if you don't follow me at Twitter and you want to get involved in these, go to our website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and click on the Twitter icon, and you can then follow me on Twitter or Facebook or YouTube, as the case would be. But the polls are often on Twitter. And I did a poll, a post-debate poll. Overwhelmingly, the folks said that Trump won. But I think that's the general consensus anyway. But I did a poll earlier just to help you to understand that I don't have people that are just radically pro-Trump as most of the folks that are there. I said, if elected, what would Trump do more? Degrade the office of the president and degrade America, or smash the corrupt political system? 20% said both equally. 42% said smash the corrupt political system. 38% said degrade the office of the president and degrade America. So those are almost tied. So that indicates that I have a lot of folks that follow me on Twitter that are not in the Trump camp. In fact, I asked a question a couple days back in the off chance that Donald Trump dropped out. I mean, obviously, it's not going to happen, barring something completely intensely over the top that hasn't happened yet. But if he did drop out, and someone like Romney, someone like Romney was going to be running, would you vote for him? And a majority said yes, but it wasn't overwhelmingly so. And when I look at a survey that I did on Twitter October 5th, I just want to know how you plan to vote. 56% said Trump, 5% Hillary, 19% said another candidate, 20% said not voting. Said 39% of those following me on Twitter that voted said they would vote for someone other than Trump or not at all. And then if you had in the Hillary vote, that would be 44%. So I don't have overwhelmingly strong Trump followers on Twitter, and yet 71% said that he won the debate, 18% said it was even, 11% said Hillary won. 866-34-TRUTH. You know what would help? You know what would help? It's a little thing, but whatever Donald Trump could do to draw less hostility towards him, he has a certain demeanor and appearance, the better, right? If you're a Trump fan. You know, if he took off a few pounds, I know it's a little late in the game, but if he took off a few pounds, he would, there's something that can seem more negative in the way he walks and carries himself. So just a quick comment. All right, I'm taking a break for an important announcement. My friend and colleague, Stu Epperson, the very man who helped get me on the radio on these very stations 8 years ago, 8+ years ago. Hey, Stu, what's up, man? This is unusual for you to call in.
Doc, I love the program. I actually want to call about your topic, but my heart is broken and my eyes are filled with tears. I just spoke with our manager of our Truth Network station, and there's a lot of political buzz out there. Of course, you know, rarely a program is so awesome like yours that actually brings the biblical, you know, Christ-centered approach, which I love what you do. I just wanted you have a lot of prayer warriors. You're a prayer warrior yourself. You have the Fire School of Ministry. A big chunk of Eastern North Carolina and South Carolina, right where we have our 100.9 FM Christian radio station, Truth Network station, is underwater. The National Guard had to help our manager get out of Lumberton. People are hurting. There's looters everywhere. It's really, really bad. Fairbluff, North Carolina, is completely submerged in water. And we just need a lot of prayer. I don't even know what to tell people to do other than pray. And a lot of people have family down there. But it is a crisis like I've never heard before. And the power is out, so we have no Christian radio down there. So I just wanted to call and just thank you for allowing me just to share this with your listeners, with you, and just to continue to pray. There's some people that are losing everything as we speak. Wonderful ministries, churches, shelters are being flooded. It's the craziest thing. I've as long as I've been in radio, I've never been involved in such a crisis.
You know, Stu, I'm sorry to say that I was actually unaware of this. I was in California for a few days and asked Nancy how things went. You know, some heavy rain, which we've seen worse, and now, you know, beautiful sunny days. I just thought the storm pretty well passed by, and I've been so focused on the national issues and the political debate and ministering and flying and writing, I did not even know the extent of this damage. So right here in the state where I live now, Stu, is there anything folks can do other than pray?
Well, prayer is huge. We're going to put some stuff up at the Truth Network Facebook. We'll try to tag you. We're going to try to get the Twitter world. I just did a couple just commentaries literally on my voice memo in my car. I'm actually driving the Truth truck today. I'm between Winston and High Point. And if people would pray and just stay tuned, we're going to try to give updates. We may have to do some, you know, fundraising just to get back on the air. We really, you know, our manager, Marty Minto, who's also a pastor, loves the Lord. He was just desperate when I just talked to him. And he was just telling me that people are on their roofs down there. People are, their food has been ruined. They're people out of water, haven't had water for some time. Mm. It's just really, really sad. He said there's people in camouflage trying to find empty houses to loot. You know, here. So this is North Carolina, parts of South Carolina, and we have this 50,000 watt station. So maybe pray that the station will come on. The Billy Graham, I've been on the phone with the Billy Graham folks all morning trying to figure out a way to get a generator in. People can pray for that too, that we can find a way to get back on the air so we can actually, you know, have a communication line, you know, to
yeah, absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. So. All right, Stu, let's pray. Father, we thank you for the reminder that while some of us sit in safety and comfort, others of our friends and neighbors have suffered real loss. And in other parts of the world, even in Haiti, not far from us, there's been terrible loss of life. So we pray, God, for grace on those who've lost so much. We pray for intervention. We pray for mercy. We pray for wisdom, for help. And we pray, oh God, that the restoration would bring better fruit, better results, that in the end, looking back,
yes,
people would be stronger and safer. And in the midst of the crisis right now, give grace, give help, and show us what we can do in a practical way, in Jesus' name. Hey, Stu, it's great to be a partner, fellow worker together with you. I appreciate your heart for people.
Doc, you know how you have no idea how much that means, that prayer. We love you. Thank you. God bless all your listeners. And I'm going to hang up with you so I can listen to you on the radio right now.
All right. God bless. Thanks so much. Stu Epperson, at Stu Jr., about 6'6" tall, known affectionately as Little Stu because his dad is Stu Sr. You know, it's a reminder. I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, we could sometimes just like, well, I'm okay. Well, my family's okay, but others aren't okay. And that's the heart of God. That's compassion. So thank you for that reminder. And if there are practical things that can be done, we'll be sure to let you know. 866-348-7884. I do believe that Hillary Clinton needs to be pressed on the email scandal. and the fact that Donald Trump repeatedly said you deleted 33,000 emails after you were subpoenaed, that's damning. That's damning. The fact that there are people within the FBI upset with the head of the FBI, Mr. Comey, and saying that this was there's under no circumstances should this investigation have gone the way it did. And it's completely unfair, completely unfair. And we'll come back. I'm going to replay a clip. JJ, we'll lead in with number 8. Then I want to play the full clip here of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton about jail. Oh, yeah, it got pretty feisty and hot last night. I'm not defending Donald Trump or denying his failures and weaknesses. Simply saying there are other issues that need to be considered.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
Oh, yeah, that was one of the strongest moments for Donald Trump in the night. Obviously, some would say, oh, how horrific, but a lot of people feel that Hillary Clinton's behavior is criminal, has been covered up. Come on. Does anybody think if it was someone other than Hillary Clinton that the FBI would have treated her the way they did? Does anybody really think that? Now, there may be a few other people that would be treated like that, but does anybody really think she was treated justly and fairly and righteously under the law? So here's the more full clip, clip number 9. Let's listen to the exchange from last night.
If I win, I am going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation, because there has never been so many lies, so much deception. There has never been anything like this, where emails and you get a subpoena. You get a subpoena, and after getting the subpoena, you delete 33,000 emails. So we're going to get a special prosecutor, and we're going to look into it, because you know what? People have been, their lives have been destroyed for doing one-fifth of what you've done, and it's a disgrace. And honestly, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Secretary Clinton, I want to follow up on that. I'm going to let you talk about email.
Because everything he just said is absolutely false, but I'm not surprised.
Really?
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah, because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
Yeah, listen, she has a lot of dirt on her hands. So does Donald Trump, but of a different nature. Of a different nature. I'm not commending either one as a moral paragon. And in fact, let's grab one more clip, then I'll take some calls. Clip number 12, where Donald Trump is being asked by Anderson Cooper about the sexual comments, the despicable comments that he made on that videotape, clip 12.
You bragged that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to the American people. Certainly I'm not proud of it, but this is locker room talk. You know, when we have a world where you have ISIS chopping off heads, where you have, and frankly, drowning people in steel cages, where you have wars and horrible, horrible sights all over, where you have so many bad things happening. This is like medieval times. We haven't seen anything like this, the carnage all over the world. And they look and they see. Can you imagine the people that are, frankly, doing so well against us with ISIS? And they look at our country and they see what's going on. Yes, I'm very embarrassed by it. I hate it, but it's locker room talk.
All right. So his point was, I didn't do these things. And Anderson Cooper pressed him, rightly so. Look, the moderators in my mind disgraced themselves, especially Martha Raddatz, in terms of their open bias. And you're supposed to be moderating a debate as opposed to clearly standing for one candidate. In fact, right at the beginning, there was applause for Trump. They said, don't applaud. Then there was applause for Clinton. They didn't say, don't applaud. So, I mean, just things like that. But putting all that aside, Anderson Cooper did the right thing to press. Did you do these things? And he said no. But then, of course, that allows him to set up it. We know Bill Clinton did X, Y, Z, and Hillary Clinton attacked the women and then focus on those issues. In other words, I just talked about it. He actually did it. But when you just dismiss it as locker room talk, you need to say with it, look, and he said, I hate it. He apologized for it. Okay, that's positive. But to say, when I see locker room talk, what I meant is this just guys talking boastfully. It's not actually stuff that was part of my life. Either way, it's wrong, and it's disgraceful, and it's a bad example. But when I say locker room talk, I meant we talked about it rather than did it. So say it like that, because it sounded like you're saying, well, look, just locker room talk. Locker room talk is still ugly talk, still despicable talk, still degrading talk, still a part of our culture. It's wrong, and wrong to women. But having said that, say, yeah, what I meant was it's stuff we talked about, just male, you know, macho stuff. But I didn't do those things. I didn't sexually assault women, if in fact he didn't. And then say, but either way, it's wrong, and I completely repudiate it, and that's not who I am. And let's talk about more important issues like ISIS and this and that. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Bobby in High Point, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown.
Hey.
You know, I've made my mind months ago that I definitely will vote for Donald Trump. My father, he was great with me and my brothers, but one thing that he instilled in me and both the boys, he said, I'll punish you quicker for lying than anything else because a liar will cheat and steal because all three of them go together. And Hillary Clinton has lied up one side and down the other. And what Donald Trump had said that she had done and said, she stood right there and smiled and lied big time. Obama's a big time liar. My insurance has gone ballistic since he's been president. My son lost his insurance because he said he has to prove he's an American citizen. Well, the only time he's ever been out of the country is he's been to Israel three different times. He would have been over there more than that if he had the money. But anyway, I'm tired of lies and liars, and I agree with what you said about Donald Trump. It was foul talk, but my husband and I both worked for AT&T for years, and my husband had told me years ago on the bathroom walls in the men's bathroom, you'd see all kind of drawings and women's names in there. So if women want to be respected, then they've got to quit dressing like a piece of trash with their dress cut up to their bottom and cut down to their navel. And then some man makes a lewd remark at them, I think, get over it. If you want to be treated like a lady, dress like one and act like one. But Donald Trump definitely is going to get my vote. I think our country is in horrible shape. I have prayed for this man, and I heard that Dr. James Dobson had faxed a letter, and I don't know to who, but I heard it on the news, that Donald Trump is a new Christian. Well, Hillary Clinton and Obama both, plus Adolf Hitler, all of them said they were Christians. Well, God says, you're going to know my children by their fruit. And when you see liars out there that smile while they're telling it like we're so stupid, we don't see what's going on, they don't belong to the Lord. They are painting what they are by their mouth. And Donald hurt himself by the foulness, but I hope I am a much better person, a person that walks much closer to the Lord now than I did 11 years ago. And I'm over 80.
Yeah, and Bobby, let me just jump in because I'm out of time. Thanks for your passion, over 80. Thanks for your passion and your conviction. All of you listeners, you can interact as you see fit with Bobby's comments. There's no time for me to add in anything on this end, so we'll pick this up. But listen, we're not excusing anything. We're simply saying, let's see how you act today. That's my bottom line. Past is past. How do you respond to it today before God and man? That's the question.